Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, head of outreach and governance.
And I'm Guntram Wolf, director of Bruegel.
And I'm Maria Demeritis, I'm the deputy director.
Andreas Sapir, senior fellow at Bruegel.
And we are here today to discuss the conclusions of the European Council of the 23rd of April 2020, which had in the agenda the European macroeconomic response to the COVID-19 pandemics. I would like to briefly summarize and recall the public statement of the President of the European Council at the end of the meeting in the night, which will give us a little bit of a background for our conversation. So, firstly, Charles Michel confirmed that the Council endorsed the proposal of the Eurogroup on the three measures related to the opening of a special COVID-related credit line in the ESM, a European unemployment reinsurance, the so-called SURE, and as a third element, a third tool of this package, an investment package to support businesses via the European Bank of Investment. This would amount to a package of worth of 540 billion euros. They also called for the package to be operational by the 1st of June 2020. The second part of the statement of Charles Michel was on the fact that they agreed to work towards establishing a recovery fund, which was the fourth pillar of the proposal of the Eurogroup on the 15th of April. And they specified that this recovery fund is needed and urgent. Charles Michel specifically said, and I will quote him verbatim here, that this fund shall be of a sufficient magnitude, targeted towards the sectors and geographical parts of Europe most affected, and be dedicated to dealing with this unprecedented crisis. He also said that they have tasked the Commission to analyze the exact needs and to urgently come up with a proposal that is commensurate with the challenge that is ahead. The Commission proposal, according to the Council, should clarify the link with the MFF, the European Budget, so-called Multiannual Financial Framework, which in any event will need to be adjusted to deal with the current crisis and its aftermath. So, Maria, Guntram, André, which are your first reactions to these conclusions?
Okay, so perhaps let me just start with a few quick remarks. I think the first remark I would make is that Rome was not built in a day, meaning the things we are talking about are actually big and complicated, and it will take time to sort this out and come to a final text that I think will be fully accepted by everyone. What we have now, we have a process ongoing. There hasn't been a European Council conclusion. There has been only a statement by the President of the European Council showing that there is no final conclusion on what especially this recovery fund will look like. We have some elements of that, how that fund could look like, but the details are still so unclear that I think, and still fully debated, that we cannot fully assess the impact of all of this. So that's perhaps the first point. I think the second point is, I think yesterday was important in the sense that a few institutional and political decisions were taken. I mean, the first, I think, important institutional decision is that we will operate the recovery fund through the European Commission and the European institutions. And I think that's institutionally actually quite an important shift, because before we had the Eurogroup discussion, which was more about the current phase, not the recovery phase. The Eurogroup, as we know, is an intergovernmental setting. And in this intergovernmental setting, country interests are much more sort of pitted against each other than in a setting where we have oversight and legitimacy from the EU. So I think it's actually a positive development that we go to the Commission and not to the ESM for the recovery phase. And perhaps the third point I would like to make on why I think it's not an insignificant decision yesterday is that there is a clear political commitment by now, certainly from Germany. German Chancellor has been very clear in the Bundestag on this also, that Germany is ready to increase substantially its contribution to the next multi-annual financial framework. She has also signaled that she's ready to accept borrowing under Article 122, which means 122.2, which means EU debt issuance is actually possible. Now, what we don't know is how big that will be. We haven't gotten any numbers. But the fact that politically there's a commitment to increase the MFF from Germany, I think, is not an insignificant number. Even though, it might sound small if you increase the annual budgetary contribution, let's say, by 0.3, 0.5% of GDP. This is not small if you allow some of that to be used for borrowing. So the amount of debt that can be created is actually significant if one wanted to. But we don't know yet how much one wants to actually. And in that sense, I think a lot of work is still ahead of us. A lot of work also on how to spend the money, how to prioritize money, how to supervise money. All of this is totally unclear as of yet. And nobody actually talked about how to spend money. And I think that's one of the key debates in the coming weeks.
Indeed, we are going to go back to these questions in the course of the conversation. André and Maria, maybe we can hear also from your side your first impressions of those conclusions.
Maria, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Just to say that I am in full agreement with what Guntram said, actually. That's a very nice summary. And again, I also think that it's a not insignificant politically, but also, the notion of how to solve the problem that has moved away from a simply coordinated action between countries into a European action. So the very fact that the European Commission is now asked to think of a solution is really giving a very clear indication, in my view, that we're looking for a European a solution, both for this phase and also for the recovery phase. This isn't without risks because the very fact that you can have a European solution, everybody's asking for a European solution, may actually ex ante limit the firepower of the solution. This is a risk, but I personally think that this is an important step forward because coordinated country actions would have been very difficult to implement. So I welcome very much what happened yesterday. And as Guntram said, Rome was not built in a day. I hope it's not destroyed in a day either. So we don't have much time to wait, but Europe is slow. But I mean, it's correct what Guntram said. We cannot expect that such a big decision can be done in one or two meetings. I expect that the next 3 weeks are going to be very busy on that level.
So I'm less positive on what happened yesterday. So I see this more as a half empty than as half full glass. One way to put it is that I didn't learn anything from the statement. There was nothing new, really. I think there's some clarification. And the clarification is that the heads of state, and in particular the president of the council, has tasked the commission with coming up with a plan for the budget, but in a sense, even before the COVID crisis, there was a discussion and a difficult discussion at the level of the European Council about the next budget cycle of 7 years, the next MFF. And so we know how difficult that was. And now, in a sense, what the council or the president of the council has done is to say to the commission, you know, no, make a new budget. You had put forward a budget proposal a couple of months ago. No, put forward the new budget proposal that takes into account the need of a recovery plan. And okay, we are back to where we were 2 months ago, with the added issue of fitting into the budget or refitting the budget with the need of having a recovery fund. So yes, it's good that indeed we are not talking of intergovernmental solutions, that this is through a genuine EU instrument, the EU budget. I think that is the news for those who were wondering exactly from what angle will come the recovery fund, you know, where it would be embedded. It will be embedded into a community instrument, into the budget. But the fight about the budget is still to be had. And not learn anything. And there's no deadline. But yes, there is a deadline, because otherwise there would be no budget for next year. So, you know, we do need a budget by June this year. Even if there was no crisis, we do need a budget. And now we need a budget that takes into account this. This is what they've told, essentially, the Commission. Please remake a budget and include in the budget the need to have a recovery fund. I would not say that this is a step forward. I would say it's fairly obvious.
Thank you. Thank you, André, and thank you for this first round of comments. And you all point out into the direction, either if it is the glass half full or half empty, according to how you see it, to the fact that the statement of the president of the council does not seem to give much guidelines to the commission. So there is a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a blank page there to be written, but there is definitely a certain leeway for the commission to make a proposal. So my question to you is, what should the commission propose? Rather than speculate what they might be already writing, my question to you as experts on the topic is, what actually we would like to see in this kind of proposal?
Maybe I start by since I think we all agreed that the proposal will be about the MFF, will be about the budget. Maybe it's useful, sure, to give a little bit of background on the EU budget to understand what is feasible and
absolutely
what is not feasible here.
What is the legal frame and what is the
yes,
space and the margins of maneuver?
Exactly. And what kind of boundaries would need to be shifted if more ambitious? Now, on the revenue side of the budget, it's based essentially on contributions from member states. There are really no genuine own resource of the EU. If you want, there is not an EU tax someplace except for tariffs on imports into the EU, right? But there is not a tax on financial flows, or a tax on pollution, or a tax on CO2 emissions that directly goes into the coffers of the EU budget, right? The EU budget is financed by contributions from the member states, and each member state essentially at the moment transfers 1% of its gross national income into the EU budget. So the EU budget is 1% of all the incomes of the countries. Okay, now, what about the expenditures? The expenditures are almost entirely in the form of grants. It's grants to member states through structural funds. It's grants to foreign countries, development aid. It's grants to farmers. It's grants to researchers in academia, in the private sector, almost entirely grants. And one element which is key in the EU treaty is that the budget needs to be in balance every year. So there cannot be more expenditure than there is revenue. So the EU cannot borrow money to make grants. That is not possible. So it cannot make more grants than it has revenue. And indeed, if it wants to make more grants, then you need to increase revenue. And this is what Guntram talked about, that perhaps there is on the German side, based on the discussion yesterday in the German parliament, there is maybe a willingness to increase the contribution by Germany, maybe by other countries, maybe by all countries, to increase the contribution to the budget. Let us say that instead of, you know, transferring 1% of the GDP, they were willing to transfer 2%. Well, obviously, if we have a bigger pot of money, there are more grants that can be made. And that could be indeed a way forward. Now, some of the money in the EU budget can be used to guarantee loans. So there are indeed already at the moment in the past, they can be EU loans. And those EU loans, they can be made by the Commission or they can be made by the European Investment Bank. The Commission makes loans to countries that are in some kind of difficulty, including through Article 122, some kind of disaster. So it's possible for the EU to make loans, to borrow money, to make loans that are guaranteed via the EU budget, but those are loans. And those are loans that obviously need to be reimbursed. The other way that the EU can make loans, and those are bigger, they can be bigger in size even, is through the EIB. And you remember the famous Juncker plan. In the Juncker plan, they put some money aside in the EU budget to guarantee loans. There was 26 billion euro budgeted in the EU budget for guarantees for the EIB to make loans. And with the leverage ratio of 15, those 26 billion were used to finance loans of 400 billion euros. So the real figure in the budget is 26 billion, but you know, you can look it the other way around and advertise a bigger number, which is 400 billion, that is through the guarantees. And so, yes, I think this is what we need to discuss now. There can be more grants if you put more money in the pot, and there can be loans if you put some money aside in the pot to guarantee. But those loans will have to be reimbursed.
André, before I give to Guntram the floor, actually you basically are explaining the whole mechanics of the core of the issue that needs to be agreed. Or if I understand correctly, so the Commission can borrow, but can borrow only to lend, not to give grants, right?
That is correct.
So the question between the balance between loans and grants, it seems that the president of the Commission in the press conference also mentioned that there will be both. I mean, that's something that has been somehow announced at the end of the European Council without further, you know, details on the question. So the question is, I think, what kind of mix there will be. But also, I mean, my question maybe that can be for Guntram, especially if there are if the Commission borrows to lend and there are loans, how those loans will be repaid?
Okay, so I think indeed, this was a very good description of the MFF mechanics. And I think it shows you immediately that unless you know the details, you really don't know whether something significant or not is in the making, because these details really matter. And that's why I said initially, we don't actually know whether the glass is half full, half empty, or whether it's totally empty. We don't know. It could be totally full even, right? I mean, it depends really on what are the details that will be hammered out on the MFF. And just to explain sort of how a positive story could look like, and because you also asked what you would like to see, right? I mean, a positive story could look like basically an increase in the annual contributions. And André, you mentioned the 2%, but let's take even a smaller number. Let's say 1.5. Which I think is more realistic than two. So let's say 1.5, and of that of this additional 0.5 of GDP, half of it would be used to service borrowing costs and basically to guarantee as a guarantee for borrowing, basically. Now, and for the interest service. Now, with 0.25% of GDP at a rate of 1%, which is the current interest rate, you could borrow easily 1.5 trillion, right? So I think the mass is probably 2.5 trillion, but I mean, the interest rate is probably not 1%. So you can borrow a lot of money and give this money as loans to countries to help those countries access funding at a cheap rate, which would allow them to spend that money as a macroeconomic fiscal stimulus. Now, then the question is, who pays, right? And so I think the first point to make is, by doing it through the EU budget, you actually keep the spreads low. So you keep the interest rate low and you allow the ECB to buy this stuff. And the ECB, keeps the interest rate low. And so funding costs will be lower than the market rate. And especially if you're worried about losing market access, this is already a significant, significant stabilization in itself. Now, then you say, okay, but what about loans are not grants? And of course, grants are much more powerful, but loans help through the interest rate effect. But what about if you add to this whole question, so the other 0.25, you take that as grants, and you use that as grants directed mostly to the vulnerable countries. Now, if you come up with that, basically that pays for the interest rate cost of those countries, right? I mean, so in other words, the EU borrows at low rates, passes on money to the member state. The member state has to pay an interest on that money, but at a low rate. But it receives a grant, which essentially compensates for the interest. So this is perfectly possible within a 1.5% budget. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but all I'm saying is the mechanics of the MFF would allow actually borrowing at a low rate, 1.5 trillion, which would allow for major macroeconomic stimulus. And the vulnerable countries would get the interest service cost from the loans paid through grants, essentially net transfers through the MFF. That's one way of doing it, and it would be very powerful. I'm not saying it will happen like this. I think the numbers we will see will be probably realistically much smaller than the 1.5 trillion. I think this is the debate now. And to succeed this debate, I think, and that's my other point, will need to look also on the spending side, really, because I don't think you can have a serious debate about basically lending and grants without having a serious debate on how to spend money and who makes sure that the money is spent well and wisely and so on and so forth. So this control aspect is crucial.
So we are starting to receive quite a lot of remarks and questions. So I would like to, and there are some of them, they are very relevant for what you just said, Guntram. I just got a remark from someone, a listener that is signing himself as JPF from Paris. And JPF is stating that they are not only grants and loans. There can be several other financial instruments, including equity. Then I wanted to put this into the conversation because indeed now we are speaking about grants and loans and trying to explain our listeners the difference and what is the capacity there and so on. But is there other other instruments that that can be used in this frame?
I mean, I don't know. Equity? You mean shares?
You become a shareholder.
A shareholder, what, in, I don't know, in St. Peter in Rome or something like that? Is that, well, I don't know what this, I mean, JPF probably has ideas on what he means by that. I just wanted to go back a little bit because I think at the end of the day, I don't know about the equity part, but on the loans versus grants is an important conversation, and it is one that basically will define how we perceive the success or not of this package, right? You know, Guntram's suggestion effectively says, look, take a half percentage point on the budget, add the half percentage point. Half of that you lend out to countries, and then you use the other half to pay the interest payment, right? I mean, effectively, that's what you're saying, Guntram, right? But you still have a loan, right? I mean, there is a loan now on the balance sheet of whoever is borrowing, and that loan needs to be repaid at some point. Huh? Okay, and that is the long and the short.
You receive perpetual grants.
Oh, that I didn't understand that. So it's not
so,
a loan.
So half you use to borrow, yeah. 0.25 you use to borrow.
Yeah.
Then you lend on, which means you actually receive money. So you only need half for a guarantee, right? I mean, so, but then you give a grant to the country of 0.2%, which is perfectly in line with what the net balances of the EU budget actually give you. I mean, countries. Italy currently is a net payer of 0.2 per year net balance. Yes. If they shift from plus 0.2 to minus 0.2, I mean, this covers all the interest of all the additional borrowing coming from be it from the EU or from markets. So in that sense, you know, you fully compensate for the additional debt if it's a perpetual grant.
The perpetual grant. So I think I need to check with Andre here, because is that possible in the MFF, the perpetual grant?
So if it's a grant is perpetual by
it's perpetual,
right? A grant, you give the money and that's it. But
you do it every year. You do it every year. That's what I meant with perpetual.
Yeah, perpetual. There's no possibility, obviously, for the EU budget to take a perpetual commitment, right?
Sure. It's every 7 years.
The most a commitment for 7 years.
That's
so
right.
There's nothing in a grant, right? The budget does not. The next budget. So I think the notion of perpetual not really possible, neither for a grant, right? Because the institutions cannot commit for the institutions in the future, just like national budgets cannot say that we commit all future parliaments to make this transfer. This is not possible. So I think neither a perpetual loan, that is definitely not possible under the EU. Financial trends, nor I think perpetual. Neither loan nor grant.
Okay, so
let me tell you.
30 years. You can do 30 years, right? I mean, you can do your 30-year loans, and every 7 years,
you have a net
balance that is substantially shifted.
That is right. You can do certainly 30. You need to borrow for 30 years and then you can make loan for 30 years because also there is no possibility of having any maturity transformation. So if the EU borrows for 30 years, then it can lend for 30 years. If it borrows for 10 years, it can lend for 10 years. There needs to be always this match between the two.
I have another question from the audience. Which goes exactly on which other kind of tools they could be there. I know that it might be a little bit outside the remit of the recovery plan because it's not about in the power of the Commission, but a listener, an anonymous listener, is asking what if instead of loans, helicopter money is being distributed? And I know that this puts into the game the European Central Bank rather than the European Commission. So obviously it broadens up a little bit.
Well, if I may interfere here. I think my sense is that to the extent that we don't manage to find political compromises with any tool, be it the MFF or any other special vehicle created, the ECB will have to come in and pick up what it can. So I think that the role of the ECB is very shifting depending of how much we agree on the political level. Less political agreement, I think the ECB will have to come and do things. And one of it would be helicopter money. I think that the ECB is itself not very happy about all the possibility of doing a lot of these things, but it might be asked to. I mean, if you think just about the QE,
I see André.
I'm not convinced at all about the helicopter money for the problem that we are talking about. So I think the ECB is doing a lot at the moment, and hence that is also the reason why the European Council is not feeling a sense of urgency, because the ECB is filling the urgency space. So there's no urgency in that sense. So what we are talking about here is investment. Recovery, right? Through investment. So it's not recovery through simply consumption. So the helicopter money, in my view, would be helpful if there was a shortage of consumer demand. And then one could distribute through the ECB, for instance, potentially, a check to all of us in order to boost our consumption. It seems to me that this is not the spirit of what they are trying to do, in my sense, rightly, which is to boost investment. And I don't see how helicopter money will boost investment. There's not going to be in sort of helicopter money in terms of investment money given to companies. That is not what is meant normally by the helicopter money. So the helicopter will not fill the investment Maria? Space.
That's right. Sorry, can I just say, I think we are mixing two things. There is the phase one, which is now, and there is the recovery. And the recovery is not next year. The recovery is going to be with us for some time. And you need to think about that. You're quite right, Andre, that there isn't a shortage of demand right now. There's no demand because there's no economy. So it's not helpful to be talking about a shortage of demand right now. So helicopter money right now would not be helpful. I mean, I agree with that. But if you try to think about the recovery phase as a 3-4 year period in which fiscal stimulus will be severely constrained, simply because we are spending it all now, the fiscal space, not only for the Italy's and the Spain's of this world, but also for the Germany's and the Netherlands of this world, is going to be seriously constrained in the next period. In fact, we already heard that Germany is going to go back to fiscal austerity after this shock. So, you know, if fiscal is not expanding, there is going to be a demand issue down the line. So the recovery phase, if you see it as a 5-year plan and not just as a today or tomorrow, then, you know, you need to allow for the possibility that anything that can help on stimulating demand should be an option. And that's where the context in which helicopter money could be okay. Helicopter money now is not going to help. If I give you a check, you're not going to go and buy anything simply because you can't go out. So that's, you're right in this respect, you see. But if you see that we're talking about the recovery, then the recovery fund needs to allow for other instruments that could stimulate demand at the same time.
I just want to go back to this, Maria, because you mentioned fiscal stimulus, and indeed there was a question from Antonio who asked if any of you see ill elements of fiscal stimulus in this plan. Right. But I would like to broaden even a little bit more the question, because André just mentioned about the need for investments. On the other hand, I think that let's have a step back. I mean, we digged a little bit into the tools, into the different options, grants, loans, and monetary solutions. But one step back, what actually this money should be available for? I think this is the question that is primary, in order then to go into the details of about how we find this money and what kind of money and what size, what is this money for, and how much do we need for that, Guntram?
Yeah, no, I think this is indeed, from my point of view, it's the crucial question. I mean, I think the first point I would like to make, I entirely agree with Maria that there will be a demand shortage in the recovery phase, because households have increased their precautionary and will increase their precautionary savings to make up for lost wealth and all of this. There will be jobs missing. So clearly, we need demand-side stimulus in the recovery phase. Now, the second point is the EU itself cannot deliver demand-side stimulus because it doesn't spend money, right? I mean, it only operates as an institution that can basically pool resources and redistribute resources back to the member states so that they spend it or tax less. And that's what the European Council of yesterday was about, and it didn't come to a conclusion, but it tries to sort of think of a mechanism to somehow rearrange this financing and make it cheaper, especially for the weaker countries. Now, then it all depends on what the member states do, and they will have to tax less and they will have to spend more in the recovery phase. And I think the big debate that hasn't even started at this stage, and which I think is absolutely urgent, and which I find shocking that one talks about big financing mechanisms without actually having a clue about what to want to spend the money on, is really about this, you know, on what do you want to spend the money and how do you want to spend it. There is the consumption side, so supporting households. I mean, I think there's probably quite a bit of agreement that unemployment benefits need to be generous, probably be made more generous than they were. And I think on that side, there's quite a lot of agreement. And many countries have already done steps in this direction. But I think on the more sort of investment industry side, there's no agreement whatsoever. I mean, do we want to boost companies in the recovery phase that are green? Do we want to boost companies that are big? Do we want to boost companies that are digital? Do we want to boost all companies? I mean, what are we really talking about for this recovery phase? And I think unless we come to some joint agreement on this, we will actually see the single market to be being fragmented. And that's why I think this paper by Charles Michel and Ursula von der Leyen was a very disappointing paper from 2 days ago, because it doesn't even, I mean, it just says one sentence on this issue, basically. But I think it's actually the core issue of the single market, and the core issue why we need some joint funding is so that we have one strategy on the recovery and not completely contradictory state subsidization schemes that fragment the single market massively.
Mm. Maybe I can add one dimension on this. To then not to take the opposite position of what, you know, the negative or more pessimistic position that I took before. Let me now be a little bit more optimistic on the spending. I would make a distinction between the health sector, broadly understood, obviously, and the rest. So it seems to me that it would be easy, and I think uncontroversial even, to agree. Then one, you know, the question is how much, but to agree as far as the year 2021, because all of what we are talking about here in terms of the EU budget is starting in 2021. Right? For 2020, the budget is already allocated. It's already decided. So we are talking now at the earliest, and it should be the earliest, the 1st of January 2021. So I think it should not be too complicated, neither politically nor technically, to agree of a pot of money in that increased budget that is allocated for health-related expenditure. Let's remember that this crisis may not be over. The health side of the crisis may not be over in September or in December of this year, right? There may be a second wave. We may not find a vaccine for a while. There could be pandemics in countries that are not so much at the moment that hits us back in Europe through, you know, to various means. So 2021, yes, you know, we all have seen the nice forecast of 2021 where, you know, we have a fantastic recovery in 2021, but that may not be the case. And so I think to do all kinds of investment for the short term and for the long term in the health sector would not be too controversial at all. So one can, you know, how much would that be? Is that 20 billion? Is that 50 billion? You know, and where it would be? So there, I think an agreement can be found very, very easily. Again, the issue is the envelope. Then after, what is green and what is digital and all of the, that is the discussion that was there already prior to the pandemic. That obviously, that fight still needs to happen.
André, indeed, there are also several questions that turn around this question. I mean, especially if this money for recovery is for investment, what kind of investment it needs to invest in? And the discussion was already there about digital and about green and so on. So my question to the three of you is that if you would be mandated instead of the commission, if it would be you that is going to write this recovery plan, what would you be your take on those issues, on this balance, on what this money should be spent on?
Well, I mean, perhaps two quick elements on this. I think one is, and I see also among the questions, this question of the equity fund. And, you know, I don't know what is technically feasible under EU law and whether EU institutions can actually become equity shareholders in companies. I think this is something I will explore right after this call. I think it's a very interesting question whether legally it's possible. But if it is possible, I would have quite a lot of sympathy for an EU-level equity support instrument, because my worry is, in terms of the single market, is that every country will find different ways of supporting companies, shareholders, listed companies, some by actually bailing out existing shareholders, some by diluting them, and some by expropriating them. And, you know, I think different approaches to this will actually mean that in different countries, we will have some states having a big role, other states having a small role, even in decision-making of these companies. So we will, get more communist and less communist countries as a result of the recovery phase. And I have to say, I think this is something that cannot be in the EU interest, that we see a fragmentation really of ownership structures. And so it needs some reflection on how the money could be spent and whether equity shareholding from the fund at the EU level could be possible. Then otherwise, on sort of the priorities, green, digital, and so on, I mean, I think my thinking on this is, on the green, is a lot of the cost of imposed that a green tax, let's say a gasoline tax, would impose on, let's say, airline industry, has already happened, right? Because basically, shareholder stock prices of airline industries are close to zero by now, or very low. So the switching cost and in doing now a cost, basically a gasoline tax, might be less painful than in a situation where everybody is flying every day, right? So in that sense, there is already a significant dead weight lost due to the pandemic, and so the switching cost might be lower now. So that might be an argument for moving swifter on the greening.
What the others think about it?
Look, I think yes. I mean, I can only repeat what I said before. It's the fact that 2 months ago, the European Council that attempted to come up with a budget for the next 7 years failed. That was not a surprise, because it's always very hard to come up with the EU budget. And in the EU budget, prior to the crisis, the discussion was already obviously on the greening, which has been or was the flagship program of the von der Leyen Commission. So yes, I would expect that this will still be there. I don't think it will be much affected by the new MFF. It seems to me that the MFF will start, the discussion about the next MFF will start where it had stopped 2 months ago, and not successfully, but with the proposal that had been made. And then now come on top of that to the maybe 0.5% that countries would be willing to put in the pot and see how are we going to spend that extra money. So I think that extra money will be spent partly on health and partly also on other issues where there's going to be, and we hear more and more, this notion of autonomy. Autonomy in health, maybe autonomy in digital. So it seems to me this is going to be the big word here, autonomy, and investment for autonomy, for strategic autonomy. And then we can see where that is. I say health is certainly one domain. Digital seems to me is the other one. And then the rest, yeah, maybe going to green. But that was already in the making, although, you know, with disagreement among countries, certainly.
Okay, that's pretty clear. We are going towards the conclusion. Of course, we could speak for hours and hours about the topic, but maybe as some sort of last round, what we could expect in the next few weeks. So what are the next steps? I mean, clearly there has been this mandate to the European Commission recalling what has been decided by the European Council. What would we expect in terms of ongoing debate and discussions in the next few weeks? And what would be your last reflections on what has been going on in the past 2 weeks, both Eurogroup, European Council, so that we can wrap up a little bit the conversation?
Perhaps maybe I offer a thought. I think of the recovery phase and the recovery fund as a long term, at least medium term. Endeavor. It's not something that we're talking about next year, especially because I actually agree with André that we're going to be in some sort of a underperformance, economically speaking, certainly for a year till, you know, we can declare victory in the pandemic. I think it's going to be with us for some time. So, you know, we have seen that a lot of measures through the Eurogroup have been put in place through the ECB. Countries can take measures. But one thing we also observe is that not every country in the same capacity to actually sustain productive activities. So, you know, Germany has taken measures to the order of magnitude of 60% of GDP. I'm not talking about direct fiscal measures, but, you know, fiscal measures nevertheless. Italy has taken measures to the order of magnitude of 20%, and other countries much smaller than that. So not everybody has the same capacity to deal with the pandemic right now. So when we're talking about what needs to happen next is, do we need to find more money to help countries deal with the pandemic now and in 6 months from now and probably a year from now, not so much in a recovery phase, but in a phase where we're trying to sustain what is productive. Because, you know, all the productive activities now are subservient to what is going on. So I think that's the what we need to ask is, can we find money? Do we need money, or can countries manage for themselves, given the discrepancies that we see? And can this recovery fund that we're talking about also cater for the differences between countries in terms of capacity of dealing with the problem? And then, of course, there is the recovery fund and the strategic choices that need to be made in the medium term. But I think we also need to address these issues. Do we have enough capacity now to deal with the economic problem that we face?
Thank you, Maria. André, some last words from your side?
Yes. So I would start by saying the problem that is hitting our economies is really hitting all of them. It is not just the problem of Spain or Italy or Greece. If you look at the forecast, all 27 countries, all of them, are expected to have in 2020 a contraction between 5 and 10%. And it is not the case that countries that have fewer debts are less hit by the economic crisis. And if you take the case of Germany, Germany has been, through a number of measures, has been able to really limit the health side, and the economy is maybe able to be relaunched earlier than in other countries, except Denmark and Austria, which are in the same case. But yet, Germany is as much hit economically than every other country. And so that means really that all countries are in the same boat. All countries need to have a recovery. And given the fact that we are so intertwined economically, Germany realizes very much that it cannot recover on its own, because not only needs market in other countries, it needs also other markets to provide some of the components that fit into the cars that are made in Germany or the other products that are made in Germany. We are really all in the same boat. It's, in that sense, it's very different from what had happened with the sovereign debt crisis, where there were some countries that were really severely hit and others, you know, could manage without too much difficulty. Here, in a sense, the solidarity in having a recovery that is a coordinated recovery to the extent possible, given that we have different health conditions. But the notion of coordination has to be, from an economic viewpoint, has to be absolutely crucial. And so that makes me positive that indeed countries, out of self-interest, will want to use instruments that, you know, are able to restart the economy everywhere throughout the union. So I think that's a good point in order to use this common instrument. After that, well, different countries will have different views of how much needs to be done via the EU budget and how much needs to be done through national instruments. You know, how to do the coordination?
Indeed, Andrei, you point out that why there is a strong case for a solidarity narrative, there is also a strong case for a self-interest narrative in this whole story. So there is this whole side of the coins that needs to be considered together. And on that note, I would like to ask Guntram for his last remarks and before closing our conversation.
No, I'm perhaps just one point. I think when monetary union was founded, it was founded on the wrong premise that fiscal elements would not be needed. And I think we are, of course, now in a situation where we all realize, and I think the debate also in Germany really understands this, that you know, we need, at least for big shocks like the current one, catastrophic shocks, we need some sort of a catastrophic insurance, temporary or something like this. And you know, a conversation on this is really not an easy conversation, given that it was not in the original DNA and in the original design of monetary union. And I think that's why it takes so much time. But I do think I see this debate as a very vivid debate. And I see also political space that is there to make at least a step in that direction, and at least for a temporary vehicle and temporary mechanism. And that's why I said, I mean, Rome was not built in a day. I think we make steps. These steps may not be sufficient. In other words, established federations would handle this perhaps better than we can as the EU. But at least there's still willingness, political willingness on all sides to work together and sort this out. And so in that sense, I'm probably more on the side glass half full than glass half empty.
Thank you very much, Guntram, and thank you to André and Maria as well for joining us today for this episode of The Sound of Economics Live. And thank you very much to our listeners. And as usual, I would like to remind you that more is going to come, of course, in terms of these conversations, which are not finishing right here, right now. And that also on our website, www.bruegel.org, you will find all the analysis of our experts on the situation related to the economics of the pandemic. Thank you very much, and until next time, bye-bye.